Hi, I'm Brenda Darden Wilkerson, and welcome to another episode of Be the Way Forward. Today, I'm here with Nate Shalev, whose inspiring work emphasizes the importance of inclusion in the workplace. Through their consulting company, Revel Impact, Nate has become a top voice and advocate, helping to create and implement useful diversity, equity, and inclusion programs and initiatives.
So when we're thinking about inclusion, like you can call it DEI, you can call it caring about your people, you can call it good business, we can call it so many different things, but that really is what it is at the end of the day. It's just going to make your workplaces more collaborative, more innovative, more productive, again, because you're caring about your people and your people make up your business.
As both a trans and neurodivergent founder, Nate was named a LinkedIn top voice in 2022 and has been highlighted in the Harvard Business Review, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and more. Nate's platform continues to create positive social impact, and I'm so excited for our listeners to learn about the tools and resources that Nate has created to support company leaders. Here's our conversation. So, Nate, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be chatting with you.
I'm excited for our conversation too. So I would love for you to start out by telling a story around your passion and your revelation on a questionably sticky floor on your 16th birthday.
Yes. What a place to start, right? So I grew up in New York City, and for my 16th birthday, my brother took me to the New Yorican Poets Cafe. It was the Poetry Slam finals. It was kind of at the height of that Poetry Slam glory days. And it was really the first moment where I understood the power of storytelling, the power of telling our own stories, the power of listening to people's stories who are different than us. And that's really what sparked my drive towards transformational change. It was, I did not end up being a poet, though that could have been a path. I was into poetry for many years. But it's really what kind of drove my understanding that our stories have the power to change and that we all have the individual capacity towards change. So it's really what drove me toward working within the social impact space. And that's where I was for about over a decade.
I love that, right? Because storytelling is so transformational for our lives, for the situations that we were in. And so I just love that story. I wanted to
start
there.
Yeah, it's really fun. There's something about the energy. It's like the energy in the room, but it's really, it's just really about just listening to one another and really being in the moment and listening to one another.
I like that in the moment. Right. Because we live so either in the past or in anticipation of what's coming, and all that's important. But the in the moment space is where we really learn to just be. Mm-hmm. So but you've been a leader in workplace inclusion. You know, I know, first of all, that you are autistic and also trans. So how does your own personal identity play a role in what you do and the journey that you're on?
Yeah. So it's the one of the core focuses, right, that drives me. So I mentioned that I was in this social impact nonprofit space for over a decade. And even within these organizations dedicated to creating change in the world, they often reproduced and reenacted so many of the biases and prejudices that we see outside in the world. And so within these organizations, I found myself just having to teach folks. I would always have to do gender workshops at every single organization I was at just to carve out a space for me to be able to exist there. And so being in those spaces, having all these negative experiences, I realized that I didn't want to do that anymore. I didn't want anyone else to have to do that anymore. And it's really what drives me to do this work, because I know that we can do better. Often folks want to do better. And so really being able to be able to have these conversations to help us get there.
So there's so much there. Having your own personal experiences give you empathy for others, mm-hmm. and having that drive your work,
yeah,
to make those changes so other people don't have to go through it. Being in the social impact space, I mean, I can also testify the same way. You know, I'm a technologist by trade. I have my own crazy story about how I even got there. And now I'm in the social impact space, and it's because of the experiences that I had. Right. So I love that as a motivation. And it really brings into stark reality the things that people need to be thinking about when we think about diversity in the workplace, so just period in life. So you have this incredible career that you've developed around diversity, equity, and inclusion in the workplace. Can you share with our listeners exactly what you specialize in and how you got started on that journey?
Yeah, it's interesting because I always hesitate to call what I do diversity, equity, and inclusion. I think whenever we label something, make something an acronym, we run the risk of it being co-opted, which is what we're seeing a lot of right now. But we also just run the risk of losing a lot of the power behind the individual words. I feel the same way with the LGBTQ acronym. Like when we kind of shorten something, we just run the risk of losing so much. And so I call that what I do just because it's the most understandable thing. But I really always just focus on the impact. I really want to create workplaces where folks thrive, where we can create a space where people can ask the questions they're afraid to ask, where we can understand who we are, who our colleagues are, understand how those experiences show up in the workplace and how that affects us all, how we can all get what we need to succeed, how we can get the resources and create those environments where we can just be doing our work better. But really, I think our workplaces are really microcosms of our worlds. And if we can create better workplaces, we can also create better worlds.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we spend so much of our time at work. And I think sometimes when we start to talk about social norms, we think that stuff is just, it happens outside, mm-hmm. right? And it should. It happens at home. It happens in other places in our families. But we can't isolate. We don't like park our beliefs at the door when we walk into work, right? And it's a great space to spend time really. Sometimes that's the only space that you're going to meet people who are different. Mm-hmm. From you, given the way our society has been created, right? So, I also like the fact that you are spending that time making sure that people understand it's a thoughtful space. Mm-hmm. Maybe in the work that you're doing, people also become more thoughtful. And I'd like for us to talk a little about that a little more later. But first, you are a founder.
Sure.
You're a founder of a company. I would love for you to share the name of that company and what it's all about.
Yeah, I sure am a founder, which is not something I ever thought I'd be. So my company's called Rebel Impact. It focuses on inclusion in the workplace. I named it Rebel Impact because I think change really happens in those small moments, those moments that we can revel in. I really focus on, we often want to do these big initiatives, these big inclusion initiatives, right? I'm often brought into companies to speak during Pride or during Disability Awareness Month. And I love that. It's always really important to have these moments to highlight these big events. But I think really that change happens in those daily moments. The way that we show up for one another, the kind of even, you know, the operational processes for our email signatures, our names, right? Those kinds of daily practices are really what makes us feel like we are in included in our environments and can really feel like we are motivated to show up every day because that's our daily experience.
Right. But those little moments many times are defined on who's in the center. And so they're really easy to just do if that's who you are, right?
Yeah.
And I heard you share, and I think this is so rich, that you even had to many times show up before you showed up. Can you talk about that a little bit? You know, you said, you know, I had to come out before I showed up in the first place to get the space prepared for you. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. So mention that I'm trans. So my pronouns are they, them. And so if folks don't know, right, then they assume. And then if folks don't know about pronouns at all or gender at all, then even if I have it on my email screen, on my Zoom screen, on my email signature, they're just going to ignore it and they're going to assume. And then I'm going to have this process of like educating folks in the moment or deciding I'm just going to get misgendered for this whole conversation because it's much easier than me actually having to go through this process. And so being able to either have the conversation before with somebody, whether it says these are my pronouns, this is how you use them. When we're thinking about workplaces, that's what those trainings and education moments are for before you roll out pronouns to your whole company, making sure folks are on board with it. When I'm thinking about autism and neuroinclusion in particular, I always encourage companies to be proactive. Assume you've got assume you've got folks who are autistic in the room, you most likely do, or you most likely have folks who don't know and are going to benefit anyway. And so that'll look like if you're having an event, thinking about the sensory components, creating that decompression zone for folks before they even enter the space, so it can be prepared. I do that on my own right before I'm going into a conference or an event. I'm going to do that on my own, but if companies are going to be proactive for that, then everyone's going to benefit from it.
I think that when you think about preparation, and again, we can dig more deeply into even why that's necessary. And I don't know about you, at AnitaB.org, you know, we represent women and non-binary technologists and the tech ecosystem doing the impact there. And I like to say that we're working towards putting ourselves out of business. That means, right, that some of these issues that we work so hard to address, we want to make it so we want to be corrective, mm-hmm. like that these things are not necessary for this effort that has to take place. And for the people, the marginalized folks that we support, not to have that emotional weight mm-hmm. of having to think about all of those things. Yeah. So it sounds like you're addressing when you talk about neurodivergence and gender, you're addressing many times the intersections, mm-hmm. right, of people. Can you talk a little bit more about what you do, how you help leaders of organizations that are your clients to learn and to understand better?
Yeah, it's helpful. We talked in the beginning about personal stories, so it's helpful to also just ground it. Like when I'm showing up, I am who I am, right? I am trans and I'm autistic. I don't get to choose which one shows up at any different point. And so even when, let's say, an organization's thinking about a pride celebration, if they're not thinking about neuroinclusion for this, if they want to throw a big drag bingo or a drag event, right, which can really affirm an LGBTQ identity, but if there are, you know, flashing lights and the music's super loud, and there's no clear instructions around the social environment about how I'm supposed to show up or what I'm supposed to do. I'm in a workplace, but now it's a party. What does that mean? How am I supposed to interact with one another? Yeah. Then I'm not actually going to be able to show up for this at all. And so when we're thinking about the intersections, it's really thinking about who we are as full people. How can we address those different parts of us? How can we make sure that we are just being thoughtful and intentional mm-hmm. about how all these different identities and experiences are showing up?
Yeah. And it is very thoughtful. And, you know, I was thinking as you were talking, when we give our conference, the Grace Hopper Celebration, we make sure we make different spaces for neurodivergent people or people who just, like, for instance, I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I can take it in for a while and then I need to go away, right? You know, to think about different people's experiences. And I even really want to take this conversation back and make sure that we are doing that, mm-hmm. you know, so it's many times people will, as they address inclusion or whatever they want to call it, because you made a really good point about what happens when we put a name or a label on something. And we're in this weird space right now. We can talk about where certain names have come under attack. If you really think about the work that we do, this has been present for decades, and it just changes names because mm-hmm. it gets co-opted from time to time. But we want to make sure that we are, again, putting ourselves in a place where it's not one and done. We're always going back, making sure that everyone has been considered and thought of and planned for. And so it's really important work that you're doing to bring these types of issues to the C-suite. So I just want to congratulate you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the Grace Hopper Conference, and I think it's interesting about intentionality because I'm curious. I think it's new that the inclusion of non-binary folks, because I went to the Grace Hopper several years ago, a handful of years ago, don't remember exactly when. And even being in that space and wondering if I should be in that space. Is this a space for me? So even having that intentionality within the name to say these are the folks who are welcomed here, I think is so important.
Well, I mean, if people are going to belong, you have to be intentional about it. I mean, I can even, you know, I'll go ahead and be transparent and share my own experience. The first time that I attended Grace Hopper before I worked for the company, first time I didn't even know about it. And I could tell the story about how I even accidentally found out about us. And I remember coming in, we were much smaller then. and there was this table where there were all these like flags that you could add to your badge. And what I loved was that there was just everybody. I mean, there was like, you know, different nationalities, different genders, different age groups. I mean, it was all there. And then there was one bucket for all things Black. Mm-hmm. There wasn't like, you know, it was all things Black. Mm-hmm. And the flags were all gone. And I looked around and I thought, there are not enough, you know. I mean, seriously, there was a flag for purple hair.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, it was like, okay. And I looked around and I was like, there are many Black people here. How can there not be flags, right? So it's really, and I felt something about that. So it's like, how can you be intentional? Mm-hmm. How can you be very intentional? And I know people will say, oh my God, that's just so much work. I'm like, well, I have four kids. And let me tell you something. They are, none of them are alike. Not one. They don't match at all. So if I try to do the same thing to make sure that each of them is loved, cared for, somebody's going to be left out. Somebody's going to feel like they don't have what they need. So I just feel like it's part of the human experience to do the types of things that we do here in this space. I also want to harken back to your comment about getting into the social space, right? I think that is so important. I'm glad you did it. But we have to be clear, those of us that are in the social space where we do this work, we can bring the very same systems into our work that we really have the best of intention of trying to fix if we're not careful, because there's so much to do. And so I love where you bring up the fact that, you know, you ran into some of the same stuff there, right? And you had to address it there. Can you speak to a little of that experience?
Yeah, I think it's when we assume that we, right, are all having a similar experience, or when we assume folks just might know what to do. And it's really in those assumptions that we can just run into conflicts. So whether it's an icebreaker event that you just have folks kind of mingling in the beginning and you assume everyone's just going to be able to know how to interact, that we know the kinds of conversations we should be having, we know the questions we should be asking, or even within kind of our workplace environments. I was at an organization that did a renovation, and it was an open office environment after that. And so then it was long tables with everyone sitting right next to each other, fluorescent lights, white walls. And some folks may not have liked it, or they might have really enjoyed it because they could collaborate. And for me, I just couldn't function in that environment. And so I think it's within those assumptions about what folks might need or how we are supposed to act that we run into trouble.
So true. So true. I also want to talk about how technology plays a role in what you do as a social impact expert. You were named a LinkedIn top voice. And I was reading about how in a short period of time, you grew your LinkedIn presence from 1,000 followers to 10,000. And you're way beyond that now, but that is an incredible growth that you had in such a short period of time. How do you leverage technology and social media platforms to help expand your voice and get your messages out there?
Yeah, I think technology in general is really, I think for many reasons, but I think one of the reasons why it's so great, particularly for trans and autistic folks thinking about that intersection, is that we are able to present ourselves in a way where we don't have to necessarily be performing, I guess, for lack of a better word. So even within tech, you can have an avatar, let's say, for folks who are transitioning, who might want to present themselves in a specific way. I don't have to worry about my facial expressions. I don't have to worry about what I'm doing in the moment. I can actually take the time to think about it, how I'm going to present myself, what feels comfortable. And so I think technology offers so many different opportunities for success in that area. For me, the storytelling is a big piece. I really like storytelling. LinkedIn allows for long form storytelling. And so I was really able to have space to tell these stories that I wanted to tell in the way that I wanted to tell them. And that just really resonated with folks. I don't really have a clear understanding of that, but it was really able to be really clear about what I was saying and how I was saying it. And it really took off. It was really about focusing on my individual experiences, having really clear takeaways for folks to learn, and then just seeing that take off has been really phenomenal in ways that I didn't anticipate. Yeah. So hearing from, I'll tell a story about, let's say, an experience being a trans person in the workplace, and then I'll have the parents of trans kids sending me messages, or, you know, I kind of expect, let's say, a person newly transitioning the workplace to reach out, but then seeing how it affects so many different other people is something that's really special. And I think LinkedIn itself is really unique in that, but I think technology overall affords us that opportunity.
Well, it does, but that was really humble. I think that you're obviously showing your genius there, and that people, it's resonating with people. And I think another part of it is you help people be seen, mm-hmm. and people want to be seen, mm-hmm. and, you know, and normalized. Like, you know, we talk a lot about that word, you know, normal, right? And so when people are not present, and you mentioned the Grace Hopper celebration, people need to be present in technology. All types of people need to be present in technology, represented. They need to be at the table because there are going to be folks across the world who will be using the tech that is created by those folks. And if there are people who are not at that table, then some of those folks are not going to have their needs met. And that's really, really key. And, you know, calling them out and telling your story gives them a space that many times folks don't have if they are marginalized. So, you know, once again, you're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it helps to also even provide a framework, because I think often when I speak to companies that they're talking about, well, how do we account for everyone? If everyone is so different and everyone has unique experiences, what does that mean? And so I think if you have this framework and you can practice that muscle of being intentional, of being able to create that those structures around it, then you'll be able to approach each situation, even though each person is unique. If you already have that framework, that foundation, then you'll be much, much better set up for success.
I like that muscle word. I use that all the time. It's a muscle that gets developed. First, you know, when you start using a muscle, the first thing it does is it cries out because you haven't been using it. It's like, I don't know what this is, right? But the more you use it, it works, it develops, it becomes normal, right? And so again, it's such important work and you're bringing attention to it.
Yeah.
So think.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's really important thinking about particularly trans visibility now. I think trans folks are like less than 1% of the population, and yet we take up so much space in the news and the media with all, you know, hundreds of legislation and bills and all of that. So I think particularly thinking about visibility and what it means and how we feel comfortable telling our stories and also listening to other stories. And it just, it just sparked that it's.
Yeah, very true. Very true. We could talk about some of that legislation. But first, when you think specifically about transgender inclusion in the workplace, I'm going to stick with the workplace here for a moment. What are some of the recommended policies that you share with businesses that they or practices that they should put into place?
Yeah, I think first it's ensuring that everyone understands what it means to be trans. Like when we say the word transgender, what does that mean? How does it show up? So being able to first have folks understand what it means to be trans is really just the very first step in terms of education and awareness and understanding. And then really thinking about how it can be embedded into each and every aspect of work, like all inclusion work. So things like admin and operations. So when a candidate it applies to the organization and you've got a field for legal name and name, are you pulling then from the legal name? I've had that before. I've applied to organizations. They've had multiple fields. I've been like, great, you're going to be able to know what to call me. And then every other communication I get is calling me by my legal name. And so it really is about thinking through each and every aspect of the workplace, from stigma that managers might hold that they don't know, how they're interacting with folks, how they're leading their teams, to that operations, to admin, to HR, you know, comprehensive benefits. It really is kind of all encompassing. So the first step is the education. Then it's really thinking through how can this be all encompassing? What are the things that we can implement, the structures and the processes, as well as the education and training?
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of work. It's great work. And you're focusing on so many things that we care about here. And it need to be like inclusion, allyship is important, being able to encourage people to tell their stories and others to listen to their stories. So if our listeners overhear something that is hurtful or harmful to someone in the workplace that's trans or even in public, right? What can they do as an ally or a bystander to intervene? Or should they?
It's a great question. I would actually say the first thing is that they actually need to know that this thing is harmful. So you actually need to be able to recognize what it looks like for in terms of something that might be harmful towards a trans person. So I think it starts both with understanding where your own personal gaps in knowledge are, understanding what this looks like, what comments look like, what words are used, what can be harmful, what inclusive language looks like. So even something that might, well-meaning allies saying like, oh, this person is transitioning and becoming a man, the kind of phrasing of becoming a man versus saying, no, he is a man and he's going through, gender affirmation process. Even changing our language internally first to understand what this means, what inclusive language looks like. So it starts with us. It starts with understanding where our knowledge gaps are before we can identify it in others. So that's the first thing that I would say. I've seen many well-meaning allies want to intervene, and then the intervention is more harmful than the thing that happened in the first place. The second thing is I would say, I have a whole workshop on it, but I really focus on addressing the comment, not the person, right? So being able to identify the specific behaviors first. So understanding where we are, how we can identify those biases, and then just knowing that really depending on what is happening, right? We really want to interrupt the bias in and of itself. And so depending on what's happening, if it's already escalated, knowing if it's a time to change hearts or minds and knowing when it's not is really important. And so if there is something that, let's say is, right, somebody has said a really transphobic thing to somebody, somebody's misgendering somebody in public in a way that is really harmful, right? Interrupting that in whatever way you can. That comment wasn't okay. That's not okay. Her name is Jane. She just said her name is Jane, right? Whatever the thing is, being able to interrupt it in the moment can be really important. But there are all these power dynamics that can be at play, right? So if your manager is the one who just did the misgendering, you might not feel comfortable doing that in the moment. And that's really important. Safety always comes first. And so knowing what safety means to you, thinking about intersectionality, what safety means, right? Safety means right. something very different for me than it might mean for somebody else. And right. so knowing that first and saying, okay, maybe now is not the right time for me to say this in public. Maybe I need to go to another ally to talk to my manager because my manager is going to listen to this person more than they're going to listen to me, or it's safer for this other person to do it. Or maybe I can, you know, send HR an email with this thing that happened and I can document it and then I can send it. And then that can be my way to intervene. Maybe I'll go to the person who is misgender after and talk to them and see what they want me to do next time. Maybe they don't want me to do anything at all because we were talking about this deliverable. And if I mention that they were just misgendered, now we're spending 20 minutes talking about pronouns. And really, we just wanted to talk about, you know, when we're going to be able to get this project done by. And so there are so many different factors at play when we're thinking about interventions. But that's really what I would say. It starts with us and then thinking about safety and then knowing that there are so many different ways that interrupting that bias can happen. It doesn't only look like saying something in the moment or putting yourself on the line.
Right. I think that is a great thing to underscore. It's not one size fits all. And again, the continuing thread here is the thoughtfulness. Like, I think many times, I know in my own experiences, allies think that there's one way to react to a situation. And just as you said before, that way many times can be more harmful than other ways, and they mean well, but you know, it's almost like stop for, I don't know, some number of seconds and think about it.
Yeah.
And think about the safety element, because safety is different as you add intersections, right? Physical safety, emotional safety, job mm-hmm. safety.
Yep.
It differs, right? So that thoughtfulness is so, so important. So you created a trans inclusive language guide that is a free resource on your website. What can people expect to learn when they download that guide?
That's a great question. I love that. So the first thing is just generally, like, what do we mean when we say trans? What is gender? How are we thinking about gender? We're thinking about sex assigned at birth. We're thinking about gender identity, gender expression, how all those things interact. What are some language, like, how do we talk about gender? How do we talk about trans folks? What language is more inclusive to use? What language maybe is more common that is less inclusive, and what can we do instead? Folks, I think, often get really focused on, I want to say the right thing. And so that guide is really to help folks understand that. I understand where that comes from, and also you're going to say the wrong thing. It's just going to happen, right? We all kind of live in the mm-hmm. world and we live under these systems. And so being able to really not focus on the specifics, language is always changing, but really thinking more about those frameworks. How are we approaching trans inclusion? How are you approaching gender? How are you approaching this idea of inclusive language, and then be able to move forward from there?
Yeah, I mean, so much education is necessary. When we learn about other people that maybe we didn't grow up around, we are not accustomed to hearing the way things are expressed. It's a learning experience. And bringing it into the workplace, I think really, and that's what you said earlier, you want to take that weight off of the person having to come into that workplace and do all of that work. And so you're helping both sides of the equation to really have a better, more productive experience. And I think that's really meaningful. So I read a post you wrote on LinkedIn about you having they, them pronouns in your resume. And you noticed you received fewer responses and also still got misgendered during interviews. And it reminded me of a study done probably decades ago about black sounding names and the differences of an experience when it's the exact same person. I think this personal experience is really important because it sets up a big reason why you do the work that you do. You mentioned that all of these companies have a diversity statement on their website. And yet during the hiring process, there's still this bias and discrimination happening. Can you talk more about this disconnect that many times that you find? And is it still what we've already talked about before, the lack of education in about a particular population, or is there something more?
I think it's about intention. We've been talking about intention a lot. And so I think the intention behind a company putting out a diversity statement, when I work with organizations to help them craft their inclusion statements, you can really tell, it's really telling just even in that process. So do they just want to say the right words? Do they want to signal the right words? Do they want to have it because it's will showcase what they want their company to be? Or are they actually saying, we want to make sure that we are presenting a statement to the world so the right folks know where to come, right? We want to make sure that our clients, our future employees, our present employees know what we're about, and they know exactly what to expect. And they see it more as a reflection of the work culture versus versus like aspirational, or versus just what they're hoping to present to the world, versus seeing it as this kind of living, breathing reflection of what's happening in their organizations. And so I think that's often where the disconnect is, really the intention behind what a statement like that might mean, if it is a reflection of the work that they're doing, or if it's really kind of that aspirational, we just want to look good. And so we're putting it up there and, that's why we're doing it. So I think that's where it comes
performative.
From. Yeah. It's performative.
Yeah.
So I think that's kind of where it comes from. It's really disheartening because I don't have, right often in a when I was applying to jobs, you don't really have much else to go on. You can look at Glassdoor, you can look at some other these things, but you can really only see what kind of a company is putting out there. And so if you're putting out this diversity statement, you can also tell a little bit in the statement if they had words like gender expression, gender identity, versus just let's say sex and gender, or depending on how they're phrasing it, you can tell a little bit about how in depth they're thinking about it, and that could have been a signal. It was incredibly disheartening to have that experience, because then you start to think there must be something wrong with me. There must be something wrong with who I am. I haven't even applied, and I'm already feeling like I've done the wrong thing. I've said the wrong thing. I'm not showing up in a way that these organizations are expecting. And so, how can I even hope to have a future career here?
And it just made me think about how the technology may also come into play, because we know technology screens the resumes, and we've known, about the gender drama in the past where they screened out all the women, know, if they went any women's sports or, women's colleges, et cetera, et cetera. And so, for all the technologists out there, it's another thing to think about, is your AI functioning correctly in this particular instance? There's so many things to check to make sure that you are not excluding people, mm-hmm. that inclusion is so very important. You know, I think you've said this before, but I want you to go more richly into what does inclusion mean? Help people understand, you know, because again, that's a label. That's one of those labels, diversity, equity, inclusion. What does that really mean in the context of your work?
Yeah, I didn't say this. I don't remember who said it, but businesses are made up of people. And so when you're focusing on your people, your businesses are going to thrive. And so for me, inclusion is really thinking about who your people are, what their experiences have been, and how can you get them the resources that they need to succeed. Everyone needs different resources. And so what does that mean? And really being intentional about, again, who's in the room, who's showing up, and how can you make sure everyone is feeling like they can show up as their best selves.
Awesome. Simple, true, hard.
Yeah.
Right? It's why we have this work to mm-hmm. do. It shouldn't be.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, I obviously am having fun talking to a fellow comrade in in this work because it's so critical. And you're right. People, even when you start to talk about tech, I always like to say when people think about tech and, you know, I get around my fellow nerds, I always want to remind us it's about the people first.
Mm-hmm.
You create tech for people,
yeah.
not because it's cute. And it's fun. It is. But it's about the people. You've got to focus on the people.
Yeah.
So you've been at this now for more than a decade, doing social impact. What new things have you learned over the years? Are there any patterns? And what's your outlook for the future?
It's a good question. I mean, I think there's always learnings. There's always learnings, especially when I'm thinking about LGBTQ identities, because so much of what we're doing in inclusion work is trying to capture our very human, very complex experiences and trying to convey that to others. And so it's always constantly changing. Language is always being updated. We're never going to get it exactly right because language is always going to be imperfect. And so I think there's always learnings within that. I think for me, it's always focusing on encouraging folks to focus on what they can control. Often within this work, folks can get very frustrated because they don't have control over the policies their companies are setting. They don't have control over the decisions that leadership is making or how leadership is talking about this. And so it can feel very disempowering very quickly. And so what I always encourage folks is to focus on really what you can control. It was advice given to me that has really helped me because if I can make my team the most inclusive, if I can make sure my work is the most inclusive it can be, if I'm creating a project management system for my team, how can that be the most inclusive? How can it work for the most people? What do I need to put in to make sure that folks, you know, kind of across when we're thinking about neurodiversity, how can I make sure that everyone can be able to utilize the system that I'm creating. And so really focusing on whatever that thing is for you has really been one of the best learnings for me and also where I see the most progress. Because if we can focus on ourselves, we focus on what we can control, then that really is where we start to see some of the larger change work start to happen. We see it happen more on the institutional level because again, we're creating the small change, but then it really does have that ripple effect.
Yeah. The small changes have big impact on those who, for what it's a big deal. I mean, I think I heard in one of the podcasts I was listening to for you, when you talked about even the issue of being able to go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody got to go often, right? And for those who, which the system was created, it's like a no-brainer. You don't even think
right.
about it. But if every time, because I can even think about the history of Black people mm-hmm. where the bathrooms are segregated
right.
and you're traveling down the road, you got to think of, you got to plan this thing out. You mm-hmm. know, I read somebody talking about they knew where the friendly bathrooms were along the road that they would travel when they would go to visit. You know, can't stop here, keep going there. Too much cognitive space, right? Taken up.
Right.
But so those little things are big things to those who have been marginalized. Are there any particular stats or data about inclusivity in the workplace or the lack thereof that would help our audience better understand? In case there's anybody from this conversation that's not getting it, because you're making it so clear, but can you help them? Are there stats that could help them better understand why inclusivity is so important?
There are many studies that always show that folks who are focusing on inclusion, they're more productive, more innovative, lower rates of turnover, higher rates of profit. I tend to stray away from specific numbers, but study after study shows overall, it's just better business. And so when we're thinking about inclusion, like you can call it DEI, you can call it caring about your people, you can call it good business, we can call it so many different things, but that really is what it is at the end of the day. It's just going to make your workplaces more collaborative, more innovative, more productive, again, because you're caring about your people and your people make up your business.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's this term that I've seen you use, proactive inclusivity. I love it. I think it's really important because often you hear business leaders and executives saying they don't realize, or they're not trying to be dismissive, or they're not trying to whatever, fill in the blank. So can you explain that term and then talk to our users about how they can be more proactive?
Yeah. So often when something happens, it's already too late, which means that if you wait for you to know that you've got your first trans candidate or your first trans employee to start doing this inclusion work, it's already going to be too late because they're already going to have been misgendered during their process. They're already going to realize that in their application, there was no space for them to include pronouns or their name or anything like that. Or then, you know, I've had recruiters call me and they say, is this Nate? And I say, yes. And they say, oh, I didn't expect a Nate to sound like this, right? And so by the time something has happened and you're reacting, it's already much too late because folks have already had negative experiences. And so when I'm encouraging folks to be proactive, this is why. So assume you're going to have trans folks in the room. Assume you're having neurodivergent folks in the room. You statistically, you most likely are, particularly when we're thinking about neurodivergence with diagnostics. Most of the diagnostics were created for cisgender boys. And so those of us who are not cisgender boys get missed in the process. And so we don't know until much later, or we never know. And so if you're already assuming, you're already creating these systems, then you're going to be able to support everyone. And so that can look like, again, that education, going through your processes, thinking about trans inclusion. I encourage companies to do a user manual activity with folks for new hires, or really everyone. Yeah. So it's the idea of creating, that's not mine, but it's something that I help folks do around what does it mean to work with me? So how do I work best? When I go through this with organizations, you can kind of often see based on jobs, but like the engineers want to be left alone and they want to do their own work and like let them go. They don't want to be checked in with at all. But then you'll see with other folks, they want to be checked in all the time. This can also be some folks thinking about neurodivergence, color-coded systems to help them prioritize their workflow. For me, it would always be really clear communication. So what exactly is expected of me and when? You say you want to check in, what does that mean? Do I need to send you a weekly update, a daily update, being super explicit about it? But doing this kind of user manual activity, or even just being really explicit in your conversations with folks, can be really helpful. So that's what I mean when I say proactive. It's really thinking through it beforehand, having those checklists, having these activities, no matter what it is, to be able to have these environments where folks can already show up, know that they've been thought about, know that they're being welcomed in, and then I can feel like I can succeed. You know, with an event or a conference, right, you mentioned thinking intentionally about it. If I can go and I already know here's the decompression zone, I can know that I'm going to be able to get up and walk out of a session if it gets too much. I'm going to know that I can go somewhere where the lighting is dim, right? If that's already told to me beforehand, I'm going to be like, great, I can go to this conference and know that can actually participate and show up fully. But as you said, if not, then I'm going to be thinking about all these different things all the time. It's kind of like a low hum in the background. And then I can't actually be present because I have this running list of things that I need to be thinking about.
Yeah. And it's, there's a term, and I'm trying to call it up, that, you know, earlier I said something about that emotional weight. Mm-hmm. It's a tax. Yep. And if we're really wanting as company owners to be the most productive, successful company, we have to understand that those, it's like a tax, you know, you know, some people are in like the highest tax bracket. You know, if you're like, if it's noisy or the colors are wrong or they're sitting around people, you know, when I was in education, one of the things that I made sure that my professors and folks who taught in my programs, you know, tech people, we're special. You know, love all of us, but, you know, we sometimes will use, or at least back when I was in tech, the wrong jokes. Somebody was always the butt of the joke. And, you know, I would say, look, you're going to go in and teach, because my students were anywhere from 20 to 80 because I was, you know, ran a continuing ed program. It's like, don't do that. You know, no, you know, don't talk about somebody's body structure. You stay away from all of that stuff because you've just added a tax. You said something, now that person's not listening for a while, right. You know, and then all of a sudden, if that impacts how they show up or their grade, you're going to have something to say about them, right? So it's always this education about how can I lessen the tax of the people who are included in my culture? So very important. And like you said earlier, it's a muscle.
Yeah.
The more you do it, the more you're able to grow it. So the name of our podcast is Be the Way Forward. So we always strive, as we're wrapping up our conversations, by having our amazing guests, such as yourself, give listeners concrete ways in which we can be the way forward, whether it's inclusivity, embracing who you are, because, you know, we want to talk to the trans and LGBTQ people that are listening. You know, what can you share with them so that they can, you know, go forward in all that we have to do to make sure that society is better.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the name of the podcast. And I also think that it's focusing on what only you yourself can bring, right? Who are you uniquely? When we're thinking about allyship, right? We often think about those big moments, as we said before, but really what is it that you bring when you're thinking about, when I talk about this to organizations, I talk about like that big protest moment that I've got a picture of me at a protest. And like, this is the moment we think about, right? We think about that moment where we're cheering, we're physically there, which is so important, showing up, but thinking about everything that needed to go into making that happen. The folks who needed to create the, you know, social media posts to get folks there, the folks who needed to train the volunteers, the fundraising that needed to happen, right? All of these unique things that went into this that really touch on what our unique capabilities are. And so that's really what I encourage folks to do. I'm never the loudest person in the room. And so thinking about what that meant for me, being able to listen more than I speak, and that being an asset, it took me a long time to understand that that was really important and was actually, can really contribute to all of this work moving forward. And so that's what I would say, no matter who you are, no matter where you are in your organization, no matter where you are in terms of leadership or job function or whatever it is, you have something unique that you can bring that's really important and an asset. So that's what I would encourage folks to think about.
Thank you. And also, we look for people to shout out a founder. You know, you're a founder, so we're shouting you out. But is there a founder that you would like to shout out to the audience that people should look up? They're doing great things.
Yeah, I mean, so there are two organizations that I was wanting to shout out who are doing work around trans health, thinking about specifically around trans health and inclusion. So it's Folks Health and Plume Health, and they're helping to get just really LGBTQ and trans folks the healthcare that we need on the national level. And so the two founders there are AJ Breitenstein is for Folks Health, and then it is Dr. Jerrica Kirkley for Plume Health.
You know, earlier on, we started talking about where, you know, some of these policies that are coming up that states are working on. And, you know, you may be aware that AnitaB.org made a step away from Florida for just those reasons. Is there anything that you want to share with people who are in those places where the pressure is inordinately bad, that they can do to even if it's just find other community to be supportive through this very trying set of circumstances that we're going through. And also, you know, is there any advocacy towards folks getting involved in policy work as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's so thinking about how to support folks within, I would say, like other states, just letting them know that you're there, I think, is really important. It can feel really lonely and isolating. So letting folks know that you are there, that you care about them, that you support them. It can be really tough if folks can't get access to the healthcare that they need or the really anything, any resources that one needs to kind of survive and really exist. It's becoming harder and harder to simply just exist as a trans person in those spaces. So the easier, as easy as you can make it for somebody else is, I think is important. So I would say, again, that individual level, reaching out to somebody. There are some advocacy organizations. Again, these like national healthcare organizations are helpful. The local levels, I know that there are some folks in Florida, there's an organization called Trans Social. So I would say like focusing on who's doing that local work, because they'll know exactly kind of what channels are being used to get folks the resources that they need. So really focusing, I would say, on that, on those smaller communities. And then again, really changing, you know, when your family says a thing or when your coworker says a thing, it's really important just to talk about, because we don't know who then they'll talk to next. We don't know who,
right.
What impact you having this conversation with them is going to have. It really does have that ripple effect.
Yeah.
And so the more that we can not make this kind of rhetoric normal, the better we'll all be.
I totally agree. And, you know, we are having increasingly polarizing conversations around Thanksgiving dinner or whatever it is. But it's so important to step up and help people understand that that's just not OK. Right. So because maybe they don't know it yet.
Yeah.
And you can be that person to help them change. Well, is there any last thing that you want to share? I don't want to end. So is there any last thing that you want to share with our listeners?
I mean, I'm thinking about folks who might be listening within this around, I've worked within, Girls Who Code and Lesbians Who Tech, and I went to Barnard and Anita V. And so there's this, I think sometimes feeling within organizations around sharing space, particularly when we're thinking about organizations that have historically been for focusing on getting women in male-dominated fields or inclusion in women's spaces. And there can be this sentiment of kind of less resources when we're thinking about non-binary and trans inclusion. And so the thing that I would want to say is really, we can focus on everyone, meaning like thinking about non-binary inclusion along with women's inclusion, we're thinking about the impact that gender has on everyone and on the field. And so when we can think more critically about that, that's really how we're all going to benefit. So even some specific example can be changing a name, right? If your organization makes it really easy for you to change your name as a trans person, that helps me. And that helps somebody else when they're getting married or when they're getting divorced or when they just want to, you know, not have that last name be there.
Yeah.
And so that's really what I would say for folks who are listening and thinking about, I want to focus on women's issues. Why am I talking about non-binary inclusion? Really encouraging us to not have a scarcity mindset and to really go into this kind of with abundance and saying, this inclusion work focuses on those of us who need it the most, right? Folks who have been marginalized historically, mm-hmm. and it benefits us all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, obviously, that's the stand that we've taken. Mm-hmm. And even around, you know, again, talking about those little things, I don't think it's a little thing, but we make sure that when you look at our website, or if you're at the conference and you're looking at the images, everybody sees themselves.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. It's really hard. I know growing up as a Black person, our books did not have any of our pictures in it. You know, it's like, and I remember a comedian saying, if a Martian were to come and land, you know, and they'd just been reading our books and they ran up to, you know, a Black person, they'd go, who is this alien, right? Because they just hadn't been seen. And so it's so important to make sure that people see themselves in the things that you do, and that it's not performative. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so this has been a great conversation. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time out to share with our listeners today. Thank you for what you do, Nate. And, you know, hopefully we can get back together and talk some more about all the amazing things that you're doing.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for what you do. I really love Anita B, and I love what you all do. I think you all are rock stars in the space. And so it's been a pleasure and an honor to be here with you.
Thank you so much. Thanks again to the inspiring Nate Shalev for joining me on today's episode. Now, if you enjoyed our conversation, then please follow Be The Way Forward wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also watch video episodes of this podcast on AnitaB.org channel on YouTube. For more on how you can be the way forward, head on over to AnitaB.org. Be The Way Forward is produced by Dominique Ferrari and Paige Heimsen. Sound design and editing by Neil Innes and Ryan Hammond. Mixing and mastering by Julian Kwasniewski. Associate producer is Faith Krogalecki. Executive produced by Dominique Ferrari, Stacy Book, and Avi Glajanski for Riveter Studios and Frequency Machine. Hosted and executive produced by me, Brenda Darden Wilkerson, for AnitaB.org. Podcast marketing from Lauren Fassell and Ariel Nissenblatt with Riveter Studios and Tink Media, in partnership with Carolyn Sneller and Coley Boucher at AnitaB.org. For more ways to be the way forward, visit AnitaB.org.